Santiago for Every Artist Podcast. I am here with special guest, Crystal Waters. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good, considering, like everybody else.
So, how's everything going with you during this pandemic year, this crazy 2020 year? How have you been holding up?
I was doing really well, and maybe like a week ago, I had enough of staying in the house, and I just booked a trip to Miami and got a hotel room on the water and just stayed there for a week, because it was, like everybody else, I hadn't been anywhere since March, and I just needed to go. I stayed in the room. I didn't really mingle out. I just got enough of food to, take back to the room, but it was really nice. I really enjoyed it, so... I can't wait till I can do it again.
Yeah, it's just kind of like an escape from
the
lockdown.
Yeah, that's what it feels
lockdown.
Like. And I wasn't the only one there. I was like, the people were out.
Yeah.
They all were out.
Yeah, Florida kind of just kind of came out of the lockdown thing way earlier than everybody else. So I'm pretty sure it was still kind of live at the Miami area.
Yeah, I just didn't like, the mask on mandatory, so didn't really care for that. But I hope they do well.
Yeah. During this whole time being locked away, locked in the house, did that kind of like spark some creative juices or anything like that?
Actually, no, I haven't written anything. I did write something, and I couldn't get into the studio because I actually go to a studio to record because they were shut down. And so I was like, why am I going to write all this and then I can't get into the studio? But here recently, just before I, took my little escape trip, I did get my studio painted, new carpet, and I just actually got a new desk today, and I had someone put it together. So I got new furniture, and I'm getting ready to hook all my equipment back up. Then I think I'm ready after my little reprieve. So I got songs lined up to go.
You're doing the home studio thing?
I have just enough to write a song, you know, just enough tracks. You know, I usually write the top line and people send me the music and I just write over top of it. So I don't really need, you know, the whole, the setup. And I kind of like going into the studio. I like the feedback and I'm actually a horrible engineer. So, I just let the experts do what they do. Cause yeah, I've tried and, you know, I kind of get lazy with it. So I'd rather have someone else be in control of that.
I remember seeing you a couple of years back on R&B Divas working with Misha LA, helping her write another dance hit. And then you got to see you, how you kind of, you know, attack a song and your whole professionalism when it comes to, like, creating music and everything. That was a good insight to actually see you on the show, you know.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was good. Unfortunately, I think they never could get that. Because that was her song, but they wouldn't give her clearance to use it.
Wow,
so that's probably another story I don't know the background on.
But
we never really got to finish that.
Yeah, tell us about your start in the music business. You started somewhere around 89?
I think the end of the 80s, yeah. I was working at the D.C. Parole Board. I went to Howard University. And I just remember seeing that, you know, I wasn't going to be making any money, you know, if I stayed there even 10 years. So make a long story short, a friend of mine in the office had a cousin who had a studio, and they were looking for background singers. And he said, well, I'll go if you go. So I'll go if you go. So we went, and we got the job, and we made like $600 a piece in like a week or so. And I was like, oh, this is it. And just in case people don't know, I come from a musical family. My father was a jazz musician, and I used to tour with him in the summer. And I used to write a lot of poetry. So after I got that job, I hung around the studio trying to get more work, but I realized that I had to probably write my own songs, and one thing I knew I could do was I knew I could write. So I put an ad in the city paper, met with this person. I don't recommend that to any young ladies today, but I actually met this guy. He was on the Air Force Base out here in Maryland, and we started writing demos. And then there used to be a conference here in D.C., and we snuck in the back door. And I saw the Basement Boys. They had these really cool leather jackets on with their names across the back. And I handed them my cassette tape. And I was doing more of a R&B. I wanted to be the next Sade. It was more of that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
You look at the Gypsy Woman video, you see I had the ponytail and everything.
Right.
Red lips. And so they liked my songwriting style. And they asked me if I could put that over top of, you know, the beats that they were doing. And I said, sure, as long as I don't have to, you know, change my style. And I think the first two songs I wrote was Gypsy and Making Happy. And as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah, and you kind of breezed over two important things. You actually won the Poetry Society of America Award at the age of 14.
Yeah,
like that's
I got published, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing.
My mom found my poems and she submitted one, and you know, and it was kind of a surprise. But you're a teenager, you don't know what that means. But you know, it was nice. I don't know if that society still exists, but you know,
Yeah, it's one of the oldest, poetry society organizations. So I was kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, when I was reading about it, I was just like, wow, that's amazing at that age, 14, being, you know, pretty big deal. And also, your great aunt is none other than the legendary Ethel Waters.
Yep.
Speaking of a musical family.
Your homework.
Did you ever get to, you know, be around her at any time growing up or anything?
Too young. I remember my mom said she wanted to take me to a place, but I was too, really too young to go into any of those venues where she was performing.
Yeah.
So, no, I never really got to meet her in person.
Yeah. But even still, that's that legacy still, you know, shines through you and then to your daughter, Ella Nicole. You know, she's doing her music thing now, and, you know, so the legacy continues, and that's, you know, that's, I love to see that in musical families. You know,
yeah, it's nice. I'm glad it gets to carry. I hope it goes another generation too.
Yeah, it's just amazing how that works, though. Like, it's definitely something that has to be in the DNA because, you know, when you see it from, you know, these musical families, how, you know, the mother passes on to the daughter, in your case, your dad, you, and then your daughter. It's pretty amazing how that works.
Mm-hmm.
I wish somebody in my family passed something down like that.
You never know. So, you know, you never know what you're going to get from your parents, you know?
Yeah. And so once Gypsy Woman came out, which the video is pretty, to this day, I still think that video is a little bit before its time. The whole, yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, so when Gypsy Woman comes out and it blows up, did you know that this was a major hit, or you just kind of was going along with the ride?
No, I actually thought, you know, when I did the song, that it would, you know, do well in the D.C., Baltimore area. You know, and I got signed to a label, I think it was 87 or 88. I was very happy that I was signed. But it did not, you know, I sat for like 3 years. So I didn't really know what was going to happen. And then out of the blue, I get a call from my A&R, who I had never met. And said, I think you got a hit record. And I was like, okay. I didn't know what it meant. And I remember, you know, I flew overseas for the first time. I actually kept my job at the parole board for like a year and a half because I didn't get it. I wanted my benefits too. But, you know, I took a while for it to hit that this is what I'm going to be doing the rest of my life, fingers crossed, you know. So it took a while.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then I always wanted to ask you, like, so when the song became a big hit and it was like all over the country and all over pretty much the world, it was a huge song. And then you get shows like In Living Colors when they did the parody of the song. Did you find the humor in that, or were you offended by that?
I didn't find any humor. I don't know if I was offended. I think part of it, you know, a lot of people didn't get the lyrics. They didn't understand what I was taught. All they heard was la-da-dee, la-da-da. They didn't understand the importance of the song. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there was a lot of stuff going on in the world. You know, AIDS had hit really hard. There was a lot of homelessness. The economy was, you know, down. And, you know, I think a lot of people missed, you know, what the song was trying to say. So then, you know, when they did that, you know, you have to understand, you know, I have family and friends. Imagine if that was your mom. I have kids and somebody on TV is making fun of your mom. You know, my cousins, you know, hurt. They're mad. So it's not just me that they're affecting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if that was your daughter? How would you feel, you know,
right,
that was your daughter? So that's what I was feeling, you know. But on the other hand, I got a phone call from my, you know, attorney and the label, saying congratulations, you're officially famous, and how the sales were going up, and you know, that's how we sold an extra 100,000 units because of that. So it's, you know, it's a, you know, it's kind of bittersweet, I would say, more than being offended.
Right, because, you know,
I really wanted people to get the message, because I really put my heart into that song. That kind of hurt, that it was made fun of like it meant nothing.
Right. Just kind of brushed over the, like you said, the importance of the lyrics to kind of hit home to some people to kind of pay attention to those lyrics and what's going on in the world at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you make a parody of it, the parody becomes the running joke instead of actually understanding. Yeah. Totally.
And then to have black people had their first comedy show, you know, was something big for us to watch. And then to belittle a lot of the artists, black artists, I think about it today, you know, it's just, you know, they had an opportunity to uplift some people, I think.
Yeah, I used to I mean, I love the family and what they've done in the industry, but I also find I also used to get offended when I used to see them making fun of like artists like Della Reese and stuff like that. I was just like, oh, I don't know, man. Like, it's like sometimes it's just like, man, just kind of leave the legends alone. You know what I'm saying? Like,
leave your kids, don't tear down your own community, you know?
Yeah.
Be happy you're on TV, we're supporting you, you know?
Mm-hmm. So
anyway,
and
that's over.
Yeah. Okay, so that would get into your songwriting career and writing for other artists. Is that something you like to do as far as a creative person?
I try to as much as I can, but in this dance industry, this DJ, you know,
mm-hmm.
they want my name on it. You know, I say, come on, you can give that to somebody. Just give that to they. Like, no, I want your name on it. So. I don't get to write for other artists as much as I want to, but I'm still at it. I'm still trying. But now, I don't want to skip ahead, but now that I have the label, I'm able to, you know, help other artists, you know,
mm-hmm.
write for them and stuff like that. So I'm starting to do that now.
Yeah. And is that just going to be in, like, the house and dance genre or...
The record label? Yeah, it's called Iron House Records. It's just
mm-hmm.
House music. I'm enjoying helping artists. I know there's a lot of talent out there. You know, in the dance community, you have to network and go to these conferences and meet these people, and it's expensive. So I wanted to be able to be, you know, outreach to people, you know, who wanted to submit. People can submit at any time, and I support them. I, you know, I've got a really couple good talented people. I give them tips, everything I can help them with, which is really nice. Some of the tracks I get, I want to keep for myself, which is coming out nice. And then I also have, along with it, my I Am House Radio podcast. We have over a million and a half monthly listeners, so I get to actually get these records on air for people to hear, which
wow,
is nice.
Amazing.
You know, it's a nice promotional tool. Yeah. So, you know, and I have a couple more ideas I want to do with the, you know, that whole I Am House concept. That I'm just going to try to grow over the years.
And that's a title from one of your number one hits, isn't it? From not too long
ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wrote the song. I mean, I had a T-shirt on that said I Am House from Maurice Joshua in Chicago. And I got such a great response. And I saw that, you know, the comments, you know, people really love being a part of that community, you know, in that time period. And they just wanted, you know, they felt like they just wanted to belong to something. And, you know, as time goes on, as dance music has changed and everything, and some of the European kids don't know that dance music or EDM started out as black music.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I thought it was a very important, very point to give people, I mean, even when we were writing it back then, I don't think we really knew it was going to be its own genre. I think we thought it was part of R&B, but, you know, as time went on, it's obvious that it's house music is its own thing. And I thought it was very important to put a name on and a label to give people, you know, something to identify with.
And when you're looking at the way that hip-hop has sampled your music so much, from T.I. to Trey Songz, Alicia Keys, G-Eazy, Mary Mary. It's crazy. Pitbull. How does that make you feel? Like, I mean, and the list goes on and on. I mean, but how does that make you? How does that make you feel?
First is ka-ching, ching, ching. First you get really happy. You know, when a big name artist comes along.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I had no idea it would do that. You know. I'm just amazed. They call it an evergreen. It's like a gift that keeps on giving.
Mm-hmm.
I say Gypsy Woman has a life of her own. I just check in on her because it's just moving along. I'm not pushing the song. I'm not asking people to do anything. But, you know, like, at least once a week I get a request to get a sample or something. And you got to say no to a lot of them because you don't want it to be oversaturated, you know,
right.
Just using everything. So every once in a while, you know, a good one comes along. It just got sampled by Afrojack in Europe, and it has over 50 million streams on Spotify, something like that.
Wow.
So, yeah. And
wow.
Coming out again very soon with another famous DJ. So.
and then over in Europe, it seems like the appreciation for dance and house music, R&B music is really vibrant, more so than it is over here in the States at times.
Yeah, especially dance music. Dance music is almost their pop music.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a lot more people over there. So you get a lot more. You could get one hit in Germany and be a millionaire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it is very popular. I mean, they just love it. So I don't know why. I remember back in the 90s, they used to try to imitate us, and it was horrible. But over the years, they got better and better and better. And now, you know, like I said, the EDM kids don't even know that it originally came from America.
Right. So do you like to basically, when you release music, do you try to focus primarily on the European audience, since you know that your music has a better chance of having some life on the charts versus here in the States where it's...
It depends on the track. Like, a lot of the house stuff, we start here in America because there's still a big base. Everybody, you know, there's still a big base here in America because we have TrackSource. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
And people can check out a lot of stuff on there. And then there's more commercial stuff. I think we do more of the European market. It's so, you know, with the internet, it's so all in one. I think for my podcast, like, I have listeners, I have a large amount of listeners in Argentina, South America, and, like, Italy. So we're reaching a lot of people.
Wow. And, you know, I think it's amazing that, you know, your music is continuing to, like, have a new life of its own and just continually just keep, you know, jumping from generation to generation and just never stops. And I love the fact that the hip hop artists and even, you know, Mary Mary's gospel are tapping into your music. And just real quick, I just want to just go over your accolades real quick. Your 6-time ASCAP Songwriter Award, 3 American Music nominations, an MTV Music Award nod, 4 Billboard Music Awards, and 12 number one dance hits on the Billboard charts. I think that's a legend, if I must say so myself.
It sounds good when you say it.
How does that make you feel now that, you know, you're in this part of your career where, you know, you are referred to as a legend, an icon in dance music and house music? How does that make you feel?
It takes me aback a little bit, you know, because in my mind, I'm still striving. You know, I still want that next song, you know. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes you have to sit back and, like, when I hear you say it, it means a whole lot. It's a lot different than just, you know, knowing I did that. I guess I did pretty good.
Yeah, I was literally floored when I was able to get this interview because me and my co-host Jay, we were both just, you know, amazed that somebody, you know, from your caliber in the dance industry, we know, come on our podcast, and we're just like, wow, she's amazing, you know, top tier.
Well,
dance,
you know, what I know one thing about podcasts. This is the amazing thing about, you know, these podcasts. Today you might not be the most popular one, but next month you just never know.
You never know.
You know, I look at D Nice. You know, he was pretty popular DJ, but that one weekend when we all needed him, everybody tuned in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you
he
never
was, like,
know
all
that
over
moment
the place.
Is coming.
Yeah, on BET Awards everywhere now.
So you never know. I told Elena, I said, you know, you never know with one of these podcasts what's going to happen. And, you know, I usually don't do many interviews because I feel like I tell the same story over and over. So I said, you know, during this pandemic, I said, you know, let me get as many in to get my story in. Because you never know what you got tomorrow. So I'm just telling it to everybody who wants to hear it, and then I'll probably go radio silent again next year. actually
well,
next week.
Well, we consider ourselves lucky then.
Mm-hmm. Hold on to it.
So what do you have in store for us now before we part ways? Will you give us a little insight of what to look forward to as far as music-wise or any other projects that you'll be working on that we can look out for?
Well, right now I have a release out. It's called Party People, with DJ Spin, and we just got some remixes done and some vinyl. I think the vinyl sold out already, though. We got remixes by Carl Cox and Mike Dunn coming out at the end of the month. I'm writing now. Like I said, I have the podcast that comes out. It's on iTunes the last Friday of every month. I have the record label if anyone's interested in sending in some demos at ironhouserecords.com. I also have a skincare line for men called Boy Face.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long story about why I started with men, but I'm around a lot of guys, DJs and dancers, and I tested everything out on them, and I kind of found out and you can find that on Amazon, or you can find it on boyfaceme.com. I also do plan on doing Girl Face. I wanted to get to learn the business a little more before I branched out for women, but that's coming up soon. Did I mention everything? I think that's it. I'm about to sit down and start. Now that I got my studio back together, I'm about to sit down and start writing. I'm contemplating an album. As I said, it's a singles market, and sometimes you spend all these months doing an album, you put it out, and it's over in 3 months. So
right.
Sometimes it's better just to put out the single first and then at the end of the year put out the album. Contemplating it.
And
you can find me on Instagram at Crystal Waters.
Okay.
And there's links to everything that I just mentioned there.
And as far as submitting music onto the website, how does that work? Would an artist or because me and my co-host Jay, we have a production team that we've been working on some stuff with. Mm-hmm. And would that be something that we just submit a track onto the website, or do we have to get in touch with someone to
It's the email. Use the email. It's called demos.
Mm-hmm.
ironhouserecords.com, and it has to be a link. Nothing can't. We don't have enough space to download. People send a lot of downloads.
So like a YouTube link or something like that.
Yeah, you know, SoundCloud,
okay.
Dropbox. You can mention that you interviewed me for a radio show. And plus, my A&R is going to listen to it first before it gets to me.
Awesome. There you have it. I want to thank the legend, Dairy, iconic dance house music queen, for taking the time out today and sharing, her time with us today. It was very special to have you on. We're very honored to have you here. Crystal Waters, everybody, please follow through with, go back and check the links. For all the stuff that she listed, and be on the lookout for the music, and hopefully we'll get an album at the end of the year. And so I want to thank you again, Crystal, for joining us today.
All right, thank you guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, and we're going to close the show out today with Gypsy Woman. Good night, everybody.